Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Keeping the Boom in Boomer with Dr. Melanie Lane. As we age, there's nothing that says we have to lose our vitality. Dr. Melanie and her guests will give you proven methods to help you enjoy the second half of life. Here is the host of the show, Dr. Melanie Lane.
Good morning. This is Dr. Melanie Lane of Zing Living, where I educate, inspire, and empower people to create and actually live healthier lives. Welcome to my show, Putting the Boom in the Boomer, a show dedicated to helping baby boomers enjoy their senior years to the fullest by maintaining excellent health. Now, it is my personal belief that regular spiritual practice, however that is understood by the individual, is crucial for maintaining good health and living a fulfilling life. Having a personal relationship with something greater than ourselves connects us to our life's purpose, our highest values, and our love for ourselves and others. For baby boomers entering their senior years, exploring their spirituality and gaining clarity on their life's purpose may be helpful. In support of this idea is a study published in the March 2010 issue of the Archives of General Psychiatry, which demonstrated that having a sense of life purpose was protective against the onset of Alzheimer's disease in a population of over 900 senior citizens. This morning's guest is an expert in creating a spiritually rewarding life, Reverend Ron Fox. He is a community spiritual leader at the Center for Spiritual Living, Space Coast, in the Cocoa Beach area in Florida. Reverend Fox has been a Science of Mind minister for nearly 13 years, and he regularly contributes to Science of Mind magazine, a national publication educating, inspiring, and supporting people along their spiritual journeys. I look forward to hearing his insights on the importance of spirituality in maintaining our quality of life throughout the years. Welcome, Reverend Fox.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Fantastic.
I've been looking forward to this for quite a while.
So, to start us off, will you give us a short biography detailing who you are, your education, and what you're doing now?
Oh, sure. I'd be glad to. Well, I grew up, as you probably can tell, in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to New York University. I have a degree in economics. And then I went on to graduate school, and I have an MBA. And for about 25 years or more, I had a career in business. I worked in human resources for a number of wonderful companies like General Foods, Smith Klein Corporation, Mattel Toys, and then I also had my own business for a while. And in 1990, I met my present wife, and on our fourth or fifth or maybe sixth date, we were just chatting about what we felt was missing in our life, and we both said a sense of spirituality.
Hmm.
And I had heard about a church in Huntington Beach, California, and a minister that was terrific. And so I mentioned that I had heard of it, and we went the next week. And when we walked out of church that Sunday, I said to her, I'm not sure what happened in there, but my life changed today. And maybe later on in our conversation, we can talk about what happened that day, because now I know. At any rate, we continued to go to church. We got married in the church, and eventually we started taking classes and to learn more about what the church taught. And one evening, after about a year's worth of classes, the minister who was teaching the class, when we had a break, asked me to come into a room with him, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and he said, Ron, have you ever thought of becoming a minister? Because I think you'd be a terrific minister. And in an instant, I knew that was going to be my path on life. And that's how I'm here now.
Wow. Sounds like you kind of had just an epiphany.
You know, that's what happened. I always enjoyed my corporate career, but there were times when I would say, what's the meaning in here besides making a lot of money?
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew really what I wanted to do beyond that. And literally, when this minister put his hand on my shoulder and said, have you ever thought of becoming a minister? I think you'd be a great minister. My entire body started to tingle. It's never happened to me before or since. And I absolutely knew in that moment that that was my path.
Wow, that's a great story. So now that you're a minister, I understand you have a new church that you're serving.
Yes.
How's that going?
It's we've only been here about 6 weeks.
Okay.
But we love it. My wife and I think I said we met in Southern California, and then we moved around a little bit to several other churches. I was an assistant minister at Seal Beach in Southern California, and then I had a church in Auburn, California, which is more northern. And then for 6.5 years, we lived in the general Phoenix area, and we both started to long to be near the ocean again.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing in Southern California at the time, and so we decided to look more easterly and wound up in this gorgeous community where there's water all around us, and we absolutely love it. It's
mm-hmm.
just gorgeous. And the church right now is small. That's part of my challenge, is to build it and grow it. But it's enthusiastic. We have great music and wonderful people. So we are really excited.
Well, fantastic. So moving along here, you're a baby boomer. I'm wondering what challenges you see facing you and your generation as you're entering your senior years.
Sure. Actually, I don't feel like I'm entering my senior years, but I guess chronologically I am. I think there are a lot of push and pulls for baby boomers right now, you know, because there's a wide range of age. And so, you know, at the same time, some of us are still, I'm not in this category right now, but at the same time, some of us are still having children in college.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking care of parents. So, you know, there's that push and pull. There's the push of pull right now of the entire economy. You know, will I be able to retire, or am I going to have to work for the rest of my life? What's going to happen to me? The whole health care debate. Am I going to be able to afford health care when I get older and get sick? The idea of getting to a place where I don't have to be part of the rat race anymore, but I want to know, what is my legacy going to be? What am I going to be leaving behind for my children, for my grandchildren, for people whose lives I've touched? That I think is the main thing, that those things that I mentioned, there's just a feeling of there are all of these deep issues, and I'm wanting to leave a mark, wanting to know that I didn't just work for a career or for money or for the outer things in life, but that I cared about something that's deeper and
yeah.
more important.
And I expect that you're not the only one who is grappling with those big questions.
Yeah, I was speaking in general for baby boomers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So how do you think someone should approach those kinds of questions? Because they're not easy to answer.
I know, and I think, to me, that's what spirituality is all about. One of the things maybe we say at the beginning is I don't believe that we have our life and then our spiritual life. I think to really live a centered life, that our spirituality needs to be a part of everything that we do. And for me, it's knowing my relationship to a higher power and how I can use that higher power to create a more meaningful and deeper life in every single thing that I do.
So for someone who may just be familiar with going to church on Sunday, but then the rest of the week may be feeling kind of disconnected from that spirituality, from that communion with a higher power, what would you suggest?
Well, for one thing, in our church, I tell people all the time that if it's just about an hour on Sunday to hear an interesting talk, good music, and some snacks, that doesn't work. To me, my connection with the higher power is a 24/7 thing. And I don't think just for me as a minister. I think it's true for all of us that Sunday, just Sunday, isn't enough. For instance, for me, a spiritual practice would involve doing daily prayer work. My wife and I just met with a minister and her music director yesterday, and they were telling us that they had been to a lecture by somebody who told them he meditated 3 or 4 hours a day.
Wow.
And we were both amazed. I tried to meditate. I just meditated for half hour before this phone call, but I tried to meditate an hour a day, and I thought that was doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, a spiritual practice would involve doing prayer work, doing meditating, and you don't really even have to meditate, just spending time in the silence, spending time, quiet time. It could be a walk in nature, could be jogging, it could be sitting in silence, it could be journaling, it could be anything to get yourself in touch with your inner awareness. Also, one of the practices we recommend to people is writing affirmations, short, positive statements in the present tense about your life. So it's really using your time and your energy and your talents to connect with the higher power in everything that you do.
Mm-hmm. So a regular spiritual practice like that, you recommend setting aside specific time every day to do that.
Right. I left out, actually, I can't believe this, but reading, whether it's a Bible or whether it's some kind of spiritual self-help book, or you mentioned I write for Science of Mind magazine a lot. In Science of Mind magazine, they have daily guides, which are short one-page readings with an affirmation at the end of it every day. Something to keep us centered in our own wholeness and our own unity with a higher power.
Yeah.
And we recommend when people start out that they do try to do it, to find a space in their home that feels comfortable for them, and to begin doing it all the time at the same time to get into the habit of developing that spiritual practice. And then, like I said, I try to meditate twice a day for a half hour. Now, I try to break it up a half in the morning and a half in the afternoon. And if I blow the morning piece, I just meditate for an hour in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
But initially you need that discipline to do it. I read a story about a Catholic cardinal who recommended doing exactly what I said, and I've never forgotten this. In the writing, he said, every morning isn't a good reading, and every morning isn't a good meditation, but I stick with it anyway, because what's important is getting into that habit and spending that daily time with our higher power.
I really like your suggestion, too. I was just thinking of scheduling time, but your suggestion of making some sort of little sacred place in your home, somewhere that becomes your place to go and do that. I suspect
right.
that helps you, when you look at that place in your home, to remember to do it but also it could be even just a little, you know, could be your closet for, you know, for all I know. But
right, a comfortable chair.
So again,
my wife and I have a little altar in one of our rooms, and we used to meditate there. And now that we've moved, we kind of have switched it around. But just the place. And after you get into the practice, then it's not as important to have one place. But in the beginning, it's important to have a place and a time set aside to say, this is my time with God. You know, let me give you an example. When I was out of the school of ministry, one of the things they told us was that if you get into the mentality of the parade of Sundays, you can really burn yourself out. And what the parade of Sundays is to say to yourself, oh, my goodness, I have to write some kind of a message every Sunday. Do I have enough to say 52 weeks a year that people are really going to care? And I actually fell into that and started to get really nervous the day I was going to sit down to write my message. I thought, what if I don't come up with one? What do I do? Go in and say, gee, I couldn't think of anything this week. And when I changed my perspective from having to write a message on that day to sitting in silence, to meditating, to taking the time to do some reading, and out of that period of time of spending time with God, a message came. That change in perspective made all of the difference. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the same thing about starting a spiritual practice, saying, you know, not that I have to meditate or I have to pray today or I have to do this, but rather, this is my time period, whatever it is, that I am going to spend some time with a higher power, that puts a whole different light on it.
And so you were sharing that one of the benefits of your regular spiritual practice was that it really helped you in your job as a minister to come up with something fresh every week, something
right.
That was also authentic. What other benefits mm-hmm. have you seen in your life from your regular spiritual practice?
Well it helps you with everything. As I said before, you know, I really don't look at it as I have a life and a spiritual life. They're together. Spirituality is part of everything that I do. So, you know, it helps me. Well, you know, a few years ago, I was in the hospital. And I was in the emergency room lying on a litter, and there was a chance, I the thought hit me, I might never go home again.
Mm.
And that's a pretty heavy thought.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, having that spiritual background and having meditated for years helps you to deal with that in a way that there's no panic, and that you can put it in a deeper perspective. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, very powerful.
So in my own life, that's one way, but also in dealing with other people. I have people coming to me, you know. I spoke to a lady several weeks ago who was told she's going to probably not make it through the whole summer. Well, you know, being spiritually grounded myself enables me to be with somebody who has that kind of an issue in their life, or somebody who comes to me and says, you know, my spouse just left me, help me. So I can be with them because I know that no matter what they're experiencing, there's a higher truth behind it. And when I know that, I can be a better resource for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps me with children, it helps me in my relationship with my wife, in everything that I do. Having a spiritual background and a spiritual belief and feeling centered in the presence of God is really important. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. And I immediately got the image of the person who is perhaps trying to take care of a parent with Alzheimer's disease, and maybe also still has kids in college, like you were alluding to before. There's often a lot of emotionality and a lot of drama there, and what you're saying is here's a way to stay centered, to keep your calm and take care of yourself but be able to support other people.
That's right.
What I got out of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hope, you know, because I'm centered, I'm not going to get burned out, and I can be there and be available for somebody else who needs me. And, you know, in my own personal life, I mean, you know, as I mentioned before, lying in an emergency room and not knowing if you're going to get, you know, ever going to go home again is not an experience you want to have every day in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But it enabled me to get through it in a way that that obviously I did come home.
Yeah. So we've been talking a lot about your spiritual practice. We've touched on the church that you're now leading. We've talked about you doing some writing for the Science of Mind magazine. I'd like you to share more about what Science of Mind is.
Okay. Science of Mind was the founder of Science of Mind was a philosopher named Ernest Holmes, who was born and raised in Maine and later moved to California for the better part of his life. And what he did was try to study all of the great religions and see what the threat in the great religions are. And so I would say one of the ways it's not easy to package this in two sentences, what we're about. But I would say one of our core beliefs, in fact, this is pretty close to a quote from the beginning of one of Ernest Holmes' books, is there's a power for good available in the universe, and you can use it. And we basically believe that when we develop a belief system and a faith in a higher power, we can use that higher power to co-create a life and the dreams that we want to have. That our belief system creates the events and circumstances of our own lives. So if I believe that I am not worthy of love, I won't have love in my life. If I believe that I need to suffer in life, I will. If I believe that I was meant to live a joy-filled, abundant, loving life, I will, because the universe returns to me what I put out to it. Is that's a capsulized version, Melanie, of what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that we can create our own heaven and hell right here on Earth. We believe that we do have an afterlife, that we live forever and ever in expanding higher and higher consciousness. I'm just going to try to give you some of the things that people ask us, okay, what we
mm-hmm.
believe. We believe that Jesus was divine, but not any more divine than you and me, that rather than being the great exception to humanity, that Jesus was the great example that we can all strive to be. We don't believe that that God would send us to a hell to burn in eternity, that that there are lessons that we learn and move on. We believe that God is within us, that God isn't an external, out there kind of vindictive, a God that can be loving one moment and vindictive the next, that God is all love, all kindness, all caring, all joy, and all compassion, and that when we want to attach with that higher power, rather than looking outside, we simply need to move within. Does that give you a flavor
mm-hmm.
of what we believe?
Yeah, it does. So
we believe, one other thing,
mm-hmm.
if I could. We believe that all prayer
is answered, that God doesn't say yes to some people and no to other people, but that the answer to prayer is in the prayer itself, meaning that to the level that I believe, that's the level that my prayer is answered. If I have a lot of belief, I get a bigger answer than if I have a tiny belief.
And I'm wondering, as you're sharing all of this, to bring this home to baby boomers who are listening to this and perhaps are wanting more out of life, are wanting to explore their spirituality, how would your ministry support them?
Well, I think, let me go back to the beginning when you asked me to give a brief biography, and I said when I walked out of church that first day, I turned to my wife and I said, I don't know what happened in there today, but my life changed. I distinctly remember that. And what it is, I didn't get it then. I knew something was different. What it is that what we teach and what we believe is very, very empowering. It says you have the power to co-create with God the life that you want to live. And no matter what has happened before, no matter what you've done, no matter how much you have screwed up, no matter what happened in your life before, you can undo it and redo it. There are no victims in this life. Stuff doesn't happen to us. Whatever life shows us, we have created. So if you want to know what your life is going to be like, stop and ask yourself, what am I thinking? What am I believing? Because that's what you're going to be manifesting. And if that's not what you want, you need to change. And one of the things we say in our church is change your thinking, change your life. That one of the greatest gifts God has ever given all of us is freedom. That we have the freedom to think and act just as we wish to do. But, like the prodigal son, we need to find that out for ourselves. So, you know, if you know that Bible story, the prodigal son asked for his inheritance, took off, squandered all of it, and then found himself eating pig's food, which is, as a young Jewish boy, the worst thing that could have happened mm-hmm. to him. And when he realized, there is more to life. I can have more. Once he returned to the Father, his life changed again. And that's to me, one of the most wonderful things about what we believe and what we teach is you're not a victim. You're a spiritual powerhouse. No matter where you are, it can be better. And spirit isn't bound. God isn't bound by precedent. You can make your life what you want it to be. I hope that didn't sound too preachy, but that's, for me, so beautiful and so important that no matter where you are, you can change it and make it better. And if you like where you are, you can make that even better, too.
Very, very cool stuff. I like that whole empowering, piece to this, that if I'm afraid, if my life is in chaos, if I'm anxious and worried and paralyzed by everything I see going on around me, that I do have the power to change that. I do have the power to step up to the plate and do something about it, do something different. And
exactly.
It's, very exciting stuff.
We also have, if I could do a little commercial here, we also have what we call practitioners, and practitioners are also ecclesiastic people that work with the minister, and these are men and women who train for 5 years to be spiritual counselors, and it's not an easy path. They have to take 6 or 7 classes before they can even begin practitioner training, and then 2 years of practitioner training, and then exams and oral panels, and they work with the minister to work with people. So if what I'm saying to you about being empowered and knowing the truth and deepening your belief system, it's easy to say, it's not so easy to do, but we have people available to sit with people when they can't know their own truth, to know it for them and to help them and teach them. We have all kinds of classes that we teach and wonderful books. So it's not like you have to come in there and do it yourself. There's lots of assistance and lots of support in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very uplifting. Every Sunday I try to make my messages really uplifting. In fact, if I could just go on for a minute, this Sunday, one of the main parts of my message is going to be about that first minister. Remember I mentioned that I had heard about a woman minister. I'm not sure I mentioned woman before, but a woman minister in Huntington Beach, and that was the first person that my wife and I ever heard. Well, she developed Lou Gehrig's disease.
Mm-hmm.
And how she handled that was such an incredible lesson for everybody who was in her life. I'm gonna speak this week, but one of her main sayings was, in life, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. And meaning that, you know, part of the human condition is things happen. We get sick, we lose jobs, people we love go away, people we love die. That's painful. How we handle it is up to us. We don't need to suffer. And so I'm going to talk about that and how she was such an inspiration by saying to people, you know, everything that happens in our life has a message for us. And you don't need to even pray for my healing. Just pray for clarity so I can understand this situation better. And she said, you know, for years I prayed for a closer walk with God, but I was so busy doing my ministry, I never got the walk as close as I wanted because I have Lou Gehrig's disease and I had to slow down. I'm having it now.
Wow.
And that's, you know, when you have it, that's pretty, I think that's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have that belief system that God is part of everything you do, you can move beyond fear and look at every situation. My wife is terrific at being able to do this. Look at every situation and say, gee, I really don't like what's going on right now, but I know there's a lesson in here, and I need to find what that lesson is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I don't know if you've ever heard the story about the young boy who opens up a Christmas present, and he opens it up, and it's a big box full of horse manure, and he starts digging through it as fast as he can and say, with all this manure, there's got to be a horse in here somewhere. Meaning, in every situation, mm-hmm. there's a gift.
Right. I'm curious, as I've been listening to you share about your ministry, your beliefs, and so on, what it is that keeps you feeling healthy and fulfilled?
Well, you know, like we said before, my spiritual practice, and I'm married to the most wonderful person that I've ever met in my life, and we just have a really wonderful relationship. My wife is a practitioner, and so we work together in church, and we're terrific partners. We spend a lot of time together, and so we try to walk our spirituality. So because we work together in church, we spend a lot of time in our own spirituality, talking about our place in life. And then we also enjoy being together. You know, we read together, we watch TV together, we try to go to concerts together. We love eating out, and I try to really remain centered doing that. I've got 3 children and 7 grandchildren, which takes up some time.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the wonderful things about moving to Florida. 2 of my children already lived in Florida, and so we're about 2 hours away rather than my wife and I being in Arizona and them in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So I really try to live a balanced life. When my wife and I lived in Arizona, we were going to take a long drive somewhere, and a minister friend said to us, okay, you're going to be taking this drive. It's going to take you a day and a half. I got a rule for you. And I said, what's the rule? And she said, after 5 minutes, no more church talk. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, after you're in the car 5 minutes on this trip, no more talking about church. And I looked at her and I said, why not? And she was a retired minister.
Uh-huh.
And she said, because someday you're going to retire. And if the only thing the two of you ever talk about is church, you won't have anything to talk about after you retire. So start talking about other things now so you can develop a broader outlook on life. And it's something I've never forgotten. So we really try to do that.
That sounds like great advice.
We're also, even though we're living in Florida, we're big-time Laker fans. So we talk about Kobe all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we really do try to have a lot of outside interests.
So in addition to your spirituality, maintaining healthy relationships,
mm-hmm.
setting aside time to enjoy with your spouse outside of work, exploring
right.
other things besides just work.
Right, absolutely.
More life than
you know,
just that. Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, there's a, I'm sure you've heard this before, and everybody listening to this has, when somebody's on their deathbed, they never say, oh, God, I wish I worked another day, or I missed a meeting I could have been to. You know,
right.
That's not what's important. What's important is, you know, did I love well? Was I kind? Was I caring? Those are the kind of things, you know. Did I not only give love, did I receive love? That's what's really important in the long run, not our work. And I'm not saying we shouldn't work, and I'm not saying we shouldn't want to have nice things in our life, but when that becomes the only focus, we're way out of balance. All we need to do, if you want to see what I'm talking about, pick up the paper almost any day and read about a Hollywood celebrity that's going into rehab, that's lost all their money,
sure.
that's being married for the third or fourth time. You know, they've got the money that a lot of us wish we had, but they're not any happier. In fact, they're probably less happy than a lot of us.
So how can people learn more about you and your church?
Well, my church is, they can certainly call me. Is it all right if I give my telephone number?
Sure.
My office number is 321-338-2990, 321-338-2990, and I would be glad to spend time with anybody that called. My church meets in Rockledge, Florida at 10 o'clock on Sunday. The exact address is 835 Executive Lane, Suite 136, and we have great musicians, I hope great messages and wonderful people to socialize with after church. They can also go online. We're in the process right now of building our website, but our website is www.cslspacecoast.org, all one word, cslspacecoast.org. We'll be building that. Right now there's just a picture of me in a letter. They can also go on www.religiousscience.org.
Okay.
www.religiousscience.org. That is the website for our international headquarters. And once they get on that website, there's a link that says find a center. And so no matter where you're living, when you're hearing me speak, if you do that, you can put in the state that you live, and it'll list all of the centers for spiritual living in your state.
Well, great. It has been a real privilege to have this time with you, to get to know you better, to benefit from some of your stories and some of your advice. So I really appreciate you granting us this interview today.
Oh, thank you. I've really, really enjoyed it. And so thank you for asking me and for taking the time to listen.
Great. To our listeners, thank you for being with us. If you'd like more information on living your best life, I invite you to visit my website at www.zingliving.com, or you can call me, Dr. Lane, at 623-242-8809. Be sure to look for my upcoming ebook on creating your healthy living plan entitled Keeping the Boom in the Boomer. And ta-ta for now. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Keeping the Boom in Boomer with Dr. Melanie Lane. Keeping the Boom in Boomer is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.